I mean, she was like a Mundeley, Bird Mundeley, we found. I could write a whole book on her. And take what we had from our lips.
Oh.
But when she did it with Baba, when Baba showed her, and Baba chewed a piece of chapati, oh, for the bird to have, when that bird leant over to take from Baba's lips, she was changed. She was trembling with ecstasy, and she had to be so gentle with Baba. I tell you, I should have taken a movie. She'd go like that, and just so gently take it. Quite different from the way she would take with us. It was something to watch. She traveled. She traveled with Baba and us. She traveled in all the places. And she was such a nuisance sometimes. Soon we went to this beautiful place in Lahore, and Mary didn't know where to... we didn't know where to put her because of the... But we let her loose. She wasn't always in the... She wasn't in the cage. In fact, practically never in the cage. Because even if I put it in the cage, she would, you know, widen the bar and just walk up, sit on top. She'd walk down. She'd be on her bed. You just couldn't do anything like that. Oh. What is it?
Get it for the parents.
Oh, they try to get in, and they have such, rough feet. They have rough feet. You know, she reminds me of Goher, who's a doctor too. And suddenly, when she's reading in the night in a newspaper. And we think, what is it? It's a cockroach. Just a cockroach, my and, oh my God, what is it? And everybody, now we know. It's all right, I will accept it. But she really, I mean, she really is disturbed about it. What were we? Me too. So, there was a beautiful house, and especially for an Indian house to find a staircase within that goes up. It's a bit unusual, you know. A very, very good banister, edgy on. Beautiful. Medicine. And so we let Mitu roam about. That wretched Mitu goes and sits on the top of that thing and crunch, 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 crunch. She was nicely carving that banister. Suddenly, while we were packing, we realized, oh my God, this is a new house. You know, and it's been gotten after great difficulty because it's for Baba and they allowed us to have this house. And we're just ruining it. Take that me too away, that mush, we scolded with a pencil. And then said, you know, lock her up in the bathroom. Run. What? It was a beautiful bathroom too. So we locked up me too. And we got me too out of our mind. You know what she did? She sat on the ground and she carved the bottom of the door. And then when we said, oh, poor me too, we've forgotten all about me too. Oh, poor me, we must get it in our. So we opened the door. Oh, me too. And then we saw what she'd done. You'll not even open it again. She was such a. She didn't like bathing. Now, we had at the same time another me too, another parrot, one of the elegant kind that I told you about. Now, that elegant one liked having a bath. We'd put a bird bath in a plate, in an enamel plate, and that bird would bathe and just, oh, so beautiful. It was like a ballet dancer, you know, the way she would make her movements. Now, Me Too was looking at it very enviously, eyes big, that big, big nose, you know, looking very ugly and looking sort of, well, what is that one doing that I haven't? What has he got that I haven't got? So somehow, very the bulky form of her, she would waddle down and sit on the edge of that plate after the little one had gone. Sit on the edge of that plate. She didn't like a bath. She didn't want to go into the water. But what she would do is put a big nose in the water. Just the nose. After, and then pretend she'd had a bath. Then she'd move over to the other side of the plate, put her nose in. Huh? Oh, that. She also liked to have a walk in the evening on anybody's shoulder. She loved human company. She's like one of us, as I said. Yes, I did, Aaron. So she would be on somebody's shoulder while walking. Now, Margaret used to take a walk in the evening along with Guru Jalu, the ones who were up on the hill, Meru. And so it was nice for them too also. And Margaret was kind enough too. So she would be walking. And so she'd come and say, "Well, Mani, does me too, do you want to give me too for a walk?" I said, "Oh, yes, Margaret, please have me too." So what had happened was, 2 days before that, a sensational thing had happened in the ashram. We who never went out shopping, and there were never gifts and dresses and things like that, suddenly found that it was allowed, and it had happened, that Delia had sent some dresses for Margaret, being from England, you see, and Barbara said, all right, she would have it. And I think Kitty had one too, and others, yeah, and Margaret had a beautiful silk crepe one, I still remember it, with stripes of different colors, 3-4 colors blending, and Margaret didn't care how a dress fits or not. She just wore it, you know. But she could be a duchess in anything. I mean, she could put a sack on and really be a duchess. You know, it's herself that mattered. So anyway, she just put this dress on, and she appreciated it, and we all appreciated it. And then, with that dress on, she asked, "Mani, would you like to give me to for a walk?" I said, "Oh, yes, Margaret, please, please take me to for a walk." So I take me to on my finger, I put it on her by her shoulder, me to climb up on the shoulder, and they walk about in the grounds. This is in white. And I see Margaret's gestures, hand gestures now and then, the way she's talking. After quite some time, Margaret comes back, it's getting dark. "Mani, would you like me to bed? Please take me to bed." I said, "Yes, sure." I can't believe what I see. I didn't make a sound, but it was inward. But I couldn't believe. There's a big hole, like a big tomato, right here, and very rough edges. I can't believe it. This new dress, this is something that hadn't happened before, at least for a number of years, and probably wouldn't happen again for another number of years. And here, this is what's happened to this dress. I couldn't believe it. I mean, this was a tragedy. So I said, "Yes, Margaret, now take." Now, in the meantime, I'm telling myself, I'll ask her for the dress. I know it's got a big hem. I'll take part of that hem out. I'm good at that sort of thing. Now, I'll match it up so evenly and perfectly and sew up with a different colored thread. Nobody will know that it's done. But, oh, Margaret, just feed your shoulder, Margaret. And she said, oh. I said, "It's all right, Margaret. You know, I'll do that for you. I'll fix it up so perfectly. What? And Margaret said, "Oh, no, she doesn't matter at all. I'll sew it up. I'll do it." So I said, "Well, if she wants to." And of course, Margaret's way of doing it was pulling one thread from here to this way, to that way, to this. So it was like tying up a bundle, you see, bunched up here. She was perfectly happy with it. But never again did I give me too with that dress. And me too hadn't done it with the old dresses. Shows how much she appreciated it too.
Yeah, she liked it.
Yeah. Oh, there's no end to the Baba's pet stories. No end. I better stop. Now, to Karaman Krishna.
I would just like to mention just one small thing. While you were telling me the story, in one story you said our concern was always to bring the best to Baba. That was your main concern.
Yes.
So I want to say that it is still the monkey's main concern to bring us all to Baba. So beautiful. And we appreciate it and we thank you very much for all the kind things and the way you have shown.
But what you have said is praise for Baba, so we accept.
See how he is suffering. See how Baba suffered. Dr. Nilkant lost his life. I was injured, no doubt, but that is absolutely insignificant because the embarrassment and the feelings and the sentiments that must have enveloped me would be quite different, which I cannot express to you all, you see. How must I have felt about it all, being responsible for it, the whole thing? Being the driver, that's how I feel responsible, you know that. It's but natural for me to feel that. Now what happens is that, well, I'm in the hospital, Baba is in the hospital, all are there, and we are buried, disposed of Dr. Nilu, and poor Pendu is all right. Pendu again had another accident, you see, and all that. He was walking, you know that. He's not disabled because of the accident. He began to walk and he was very active and all that sort of thing. But all these accidents naturally pile up and has made his life like this eventually. So what happened is that after the accident, after Dr. Kenmore came and there was that chiropractic treatment given in this very hall where you all are sitting, he was laid up here, you know. And I used to feel about it. And Baba would look at me and says, well, what makes you so presumptuous to feel that you are the cause of it? Who are you? You see, yeah, it all began like this. Well, I don't say that, but I feel responsible. I don't say that I am the cause of it or anything, but I feel responsible because I was the driver. It's but natural for me to feel that way. This is no, it has nothing to do with you. It had to happen. It has happened. I told you all that there will be a personal calamity and all that. What have you? You have been my instrument, that's all. Why should you feel about it? So then I said, but what, how is it possible? You will be crippled like this all life and you won't be able to walk. We have seen you walk so fast that we used to run after you. And where is that? All's gone. But at that time, to compensate the whole thing, you won't believe the way that he got into the public that way. The first appearance was with his cast on his half waist downwards, and he says that I am the same ancient one, come in your midst again with that disability. When he was so able and was so lively and so energetic and active and moving about and so handsome and everything was so fine, at that time he just withheld himself and said nothing. Nobody would want to care for him, and he was absolutely as one of the other person, moving all in the streets and everything and all that, just incognito. Nobody knew. We were right in the midst of the people. All these people now in this country, where these hundreds of centers have arisen now, and they are astounded to find that he had been here all this. And we read now in the literature that he was here and we didn't know. But that was my house there, near. There I stayed. You'll hear many stories. You see some people coming downstairs. He says, you are Mel Baba follower. You know that he came to my house and I had seen him and all. These are the things that are happening now. So all he was in the midst of the people, but he didn't allow himself to be known to others. So what he tells at that time. So I felt it that way, that now, what is this? But to compensate, of course, he went out and told the people that I am the same one. I am come in your midst once again. In his total humility that we see there. And helplessness, he proclaims his divinity and his omnipotence. It's embarrassing to those who are around him, you see. And a person who is omnipotent permits himself to be crushed like this. And in spite of it, it's only God can get away with this sort of thing, you see. So that was another thing that my mind broke into. So all this was there, and I used to feel he was saying this and people were accepting him, and yet I used to feel that he won't be able to. Because Dr. Donkin, who was the orthopedic surgeon at the time, he did not know why he was made orthopedic surgeon, because he was a youngster at the time in London when he met Baba through Bill and Mary Beckett. And Baba told him to go in for orthopedic surgery. And he was full-fledged orthopedic surgeon, and not just a surgeon, FRCS. And when he came here, there was nothing to do with hospital, there were no clinics, not even this little semblance of clinic or hospital or anything of that sort. Just a tiny little hut, you know, and well, looking after the musts and looking after the cats and the dogs and this and that and all. What is this? The dog has somebody has hit a stone to the dog, so try a split. And this, is this the orthopedic, FRCS, you know, in orthopedics. And he did not know. Years passed by, and there you are, one after the other, two accidents where Dr. Donkin had to play his part after many decades. Then he realized why Baba made me do it. That's how it is. It comes later on. Everything is, it is according to his plan. But we expect Jesus comes into the picture. That it was telling upon me all the time, seeing him suffer. All the more naturally my heart went out. You know how I was at that time, as I told you all. You remember what I said, how it was, my mind. Yeah, it was like that. So, and to add to it all, this happened. So, well, I was feeling about it. And so he says, why are you so presumptuous to take it? I said, but no, it's all right, we won't see you walking. He says, who says that? What happened? Who says that? I said, well, the greatest authority you see now living, you see, has said it. Because Dr. Donkin's guru was one in London who had taught him this, and he was considered to be authority in radiology. What do you call it, that? What do you call the one who reads X-rays?
Radiologist,
yeah. So he had sent all the plates, you see, the best of the plates. He was not satisfied. He wanted him to study and tell us the prognosis, whether this, because Baba didn't want to undergo any operation. Head of the humor was no more there, you see. And all this was there. There is no such thing as a joint or anything. It could be done, but he said, no, there's nothing, no need. But there'll be pain all the time. Yeah, I'll bear the pain. Pain is my companion, and this and that. I've come to suffer and all that. And he would, we could see him lingering and just pushing his way out and resting on our hands and all that sort of thing. Lift chairs would be used. Sometimes we'd pick him up and put him there. All this, of course, was heart-rending for me because every time when I used to see, I knew that I am the cause of it. How can I avoid that? And he says that you shouldn't think about it. So then, in the meantime, what had happened is that the report had come. So he had seen, I think somebody, one of Baba lovers had taken these things there. So he had seen, his name was, I forget now, Dr. Joan Boss. Who is the famous one in London, do you all know? Do you remember? I forget the name. It was there. I think Gavir will be able to tell us. So he looked at it and he, of course, sent a report, but he just saw through all this and he just threw the place. He said, this man will never walk in his life. That's all. So the report had come and it was a terrible blow to me. He was assuring that, well, you... So then when the report was informed to Baba and... So, this is how we have to take it. We have to live with this now. And we are living through all these things. And I'm feeling very sad about the whole thing. So one day he tells me, why are you so sad? He said, well, you know the reason. He said, don't be sad. You will see me walking. I won't be like this. You'll see me walking. One day I will walk. Again, there is a little, you know, a little assurance that, well, maybe that day would dawn and he has said it may come to pass. But I had little hopes. But I couldn't say that I don't want to believe. Well, you say so. That's all. That's my reaction. It's good if you walk. But I used to feel that. But one day he did get up from the seat on his own when he started walking. And there are many good pictures, although there was the limp. You can easily see the limp, you see, that he's walking. But he's walking, and that's a great thing, you see. You have no idea the way how we suffered before he walked. But it's just, have you all seen that movie?
Yes, the movie, yes.
The one how he walks, you see, yes. Yeah, the limp is there.
Yes.
Years pass by. But still the stigma is there, you see. Eraj, you are the cause.
Did anyone else ever say anything? No,
nobody said it.
No one ever
said it. Nobody said it. What can anybody say? Do they mean that if anybody were to say this, they would mean that I did it on purpose? It was not a purposeful thing. Yeah. So, they all knew it. But I used to feel it as a man, I used to feel it. So all of a sudden, one day, and all knew that I'm feeling, and Don would feel the handicaps, you see, of Baba. We all felt about Baba, equally felt. Because we had seen Baba moving and running about and jumping about and doing this and playing, taking active part and all this, and what happened. So we were all, well, we were laden with grief, but that grief, he wouldn't permit us to even have that share, you see, of grief. He wanted us to be lively and he wanted us to forget about it, and he walked and all that and so forth, and everything was forgotten. Many good programs were there, East-West Gathering, and this Savas, and that Savas, and this and that, and he came out in the world and says, I am that. Everything was forgotten. But the limp was there. Now coming to the story, all of a sudden one day, Don was here, Dr. Donkin. And he got hold of a certain book, you know, called King Jesus. He never used to read these books, you see. He was not, what do you call, had any interest in King Jesus or that Jesus or that. But that scholar was such a great scholar, you know. So he thought, he was a linguist and he wanted to know, well, what has he written? And he just opened the book and the chapter was, after great research, he found that the Lord had limped.
Oh?
Yeah. Have you already, did I show you all that last time when you came, Mike?
No.
Would you like to see that?
Sure. Jesus of the record?
Yeah, Jesus had the limp. So I'll get you. Let me find out.
I walk in and you leave.
That is our fate. You come and I go. Okay.
One then, that nothing is too small or nothing is insignificant for Baba's order. So this was a small order, it doesn't matter. This is a big thing. Yes, that is true, there was a big and small, but one had to, for us, every order has to be as significant as it is, as if it's the topmost. So, with so many women living together, it's very, some of the orders were very difficult because where work is concerned, where proximity, sheer proximity of living together in the same house is concerned, it makes it difficult. So, when Baba was saying, we were at Amboli, I don't know where we were, Shimoga or somewhere. Baba, we were staying there for a number of days. And Baba said he had very important work to do, that we had to know how important that is. And all, he wanted us to do a very little thing for him. Would we do it? Of course, anything for Baba. You sure, said Baba? Yes, of course we will do it. Baba said he wanted absolute and total silence between those 2 hours when Baba was working by himself. Of course. But of course, the work must not stop. Everything has to go on. Kitchen work has to go on. Outward work has to go on. Everything, all the duties, and all these 30 women have to move around and do things, but not to make the slightest sound. Well, it just doesn't happen. No matter how careful everyone was, at other days, these things wouldn't have happened. But just at that time, something drops from someone's hand in the kitchen or the in the washing, or somebody going after a crow and throws a little pebble and it hits the roof and makes a sound, or you're in washing clothes, some, the domestic sound, with so many women all together. So it wouldn't do. And it didn't happen. Baba got us all together, we sat before him like, now, such a little thing and you cannot do it for me. And when you know what an important universal work it is, that, and how what a load it is on me, and my burden, and this and that, and, oh yeah, we were terribly sorry. We didn't know what to do. It happened. It just happened. So Baba said, all right, there's only one thing to do. During those 2 hours, you're just sit in your places. There should be no beds. We all had, you know, our little bedding like that, with a thin mattress and our little pillow each. Yeah, a little room, another one. So the dormitory was full of this, the beddings, and we were there. The Baba said, oh, now, when I'm doing my work during these hours, you simply sit, do nothing. That's the only thing to do now. So we agreed, all right. So everybody sat in their places, doing nothing. But the mind works, of course. So we could talk to each other in sign language, you understand? So Masi cautious mother who was the gatekeeper and the timekeeper for the women's side. She always carried this kitchen cloth with her. In the winter, she had made a woolen sweater for it, you know, to cover it, keep it warm. Otherwise, the time was upset. And everything depended on that time. So something had gone wrong. It wouldn't tick. It wouldn't tick, tick. And she had told Erich's aunt, Guy, my sister, who was a very handy person. Anything she could put her hand to and figure it out, you know. So she had told her, all right. Her name is Gulamasi. So Gulamasi said to Erich's aunt, said to Sunamasi, okay, you give me afterwards, I'll do it. Everybody was busy, so she forgot. So there they're seated all together. Gulamasi looks at Masiji, and Masiji looks at Gulamasi. What about that clock? We are sitting now. I'll see it now. Now she's far away. I give it to this one gives it to that one gives it to that. At last, Gulamasi's got the clock. And everybody sees it. Like now, we're facing each other exactly like now. And Gulamasi takes it. She looks at it. And we're against the name. And she's fiddling with it. Suddenly, there's a fire alarm. The alarm goes off. For some reason, I don't know what she touched, what screw, what came up. We're supposed to make not even the slightest sound, not even whisper. We go like this. We were so scared. Everybody was throwing their cushions over the thing to deaden the sound. It was a pile of cushions. Still, even through the cushions, I didn't feel become alive, you know, Gulamasi with all those cushions and all that thing, and it's like that, running out. And we just can't believe this is never, I mean, this is beyond anything that we could imagine. Even in the kitchen and the washing, nothing like that happened. But this, everybody was just complete. This is the end, this is finished. If Baba could tell us so much for that little sound the other day, with this, it was like a fire engine come going through that whole house. Funny, Baba didn't get angry. He just looked at us sort of. So, this is the kind of people I am. What is that?
Did he call you immediately afterwards? Or later on after the 2 hours were
out? No, he came back immediately. He came out. How could he go on to continue to work?
Right.
But they're all so pale and so you think you can do things for me. Look at this. Sad lot I have around me, sort of. When he said, just sit in your places, this is how it should have been. But this is all right. It's silent. It's not matter. I mean, it's not like talking. No, it's even never give enough importance and enough stress on that.
We look for loopholes.
Because after that,
We look for loopholes.
I think Marcy must have felt guilty every time she looked at the clock after that for a while anyway. Barbara, in some part of the state, when he was walking along one day, and the next day Baba asked me again, did you see a dream? I said, no, Baba, last night, no. Vivid and special dreams. Not the dreams where everything is hazy or anything can happen in the dream world. These are very clear and special dreams somehow. It's like, almost like you're awake. But of course, it's a dream. So I told Baba one dream and then another dream. And dreams, a dream that I had when I was 7 years old. Another dream, and Baba listened to them all anymore. Till in the end I said, that was all I could remember. So, then the next day Baba asked me again, did you see a dream? I said, no, Baba, last night, no. I wished I had, because if Baba asked, it makes you happy if you can respond. So I said, no, Baba, I didn't. Then on 30th night, 30th January, I had a dream. And in the morning,
I told Mara at a hurried breakfast. Or maybe it's just 29th night, and on 30th I told Mara. And I said to myself, I'll tell Baba later, when he's stronger. Because one day Baba would appear so strong and well, so we would write, Eric would write home and say, you know, Baba's feeling much better today. And it gave you the feeling that now it would be improving. Not at all. Next day, it would be worse. Then one day, it would be fine. And it was all the time like that. So I said, when Baba's better, I'll tell him, because that day Baba wasn't better. But I told Mara, and the dream I had was that we were in Baba's room, as usual. Baba spent a lot of time in that room, not only using it as a bedroom, but as his room. And we were sitting around, we women. And so in the dream, Baba was lying on his bed, flat. And the upper part of him was covered by a big Turkish towel. And I even could see the tassels so clearly. So this was a cross. So it covered from his head up to below his waist. It was covered sidewise. The towel was spread. And his hands were beneath the towel too. His face, hands, and all beneath the towel. Mara was standing by him. And I was at his feet, facing him. And I, as usual, was reading, interpreting Baba's gesture, reading out. And it was like Baba told him very clearly, tell Mara what I'm going to say. So then he just brought out his hands, only his hand. All I could see was the hands now, doing the gestures. The face was covered, and the body was covered, except the feet, of course, I could see. So Baba's hands came out from under the towel, and he told me, and I was telling Mara, and said, Mara, Baba says, this is not real. You think I'm covered up. But this is just a mock thing. Just a mock. And so don't take this for real. That's all. So, and this was before I knew Baba was. The next morning I told Mara, I said, Mara, isn't this extraordinary dream I had? Well, tell Baba. Baba was asking you about the dream. I said, not now. Soon as Baba's better, he is better today. Let's see. But then he wasn't. for the benefit of Maxine, I would like to repeat this. You know how anything that happens around Baba, concerning anyone, it's never just by a chance or something insignificant, even though it appears insignificant. And sometimes Baba is providing, by giving an incident or giving, making a thing happen, he's providing way into the future, perhaps. Nothing that is picked and put by him is wasted, as it were. It always has the fruit. That seed must always bear fruit and for some effect in the future. So the reason why I say this is because it came back to me on the day Baba dropped his body in the room here in Merida. And this thing had happened about 25 to 30 years before. 20 years before. 20 to 25 years before this. What had happened was we were in Dehradun with Baba. And Baba had a delightful way of springing surprises. He would come in with his hands in his pocket, and we would all be before it, and Baba would say, look what I got. And we'd be so excited, and Baba would open his hand, and there would be a little baby bird that he'd picked up that fallen from the nest, or a little squirrel that he found, or something, you know, and we would be delighted. And even Baba looked so delighted. Look what I got. So we were used to that. So one day when we were all seated before Baba, as now we are seated on the floor before Baba, and Baba was seated on the gadi, and he looked at us and he said, now, I want you all to shut your eyes tight. Close your eyes tight.
And no peeking, said Baba. No looking through. That's my order. And count 30. When you've counted 30, then open your eyes. So we thought, ah, what surprise is he going to give? And then Baba made me rehearse. He said, say, 1, 2, 3, 4. Not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1. So I did a little. Baba said, fine. Now, everybody shut your eyes. So we shut our eyes tight. And I said it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The tempo Baba had given. And you know, our faces were with anticipation and excitement. We were all aglow. And 30. Then open our eyes. We couldn't believe it. The surprise was that Baba had left the room. No Baba. Oh, he cheated. Look at this. He tricked us. What a trick. We got up groaning and laughing and complaining and all rushed out to find him where he was. And that was one of the things in life with Baba. You know, that's a Baba thing. We enjoyed it at the time. Completely forgot about it. Years went by. Over 20 years went by. And then, on 31st January, when we were in the room, after we realized that Baba's left us home, this incident came back to me. And I said to him in my heart, you've done it again. You made us close our eyes, and then you slipped away. Just like that. Yes. He loved tricks like that. Like, as I said, the practical joke. Like Margaret Crask, Baba's dancer. And, you see, we were each of us.
We all thought alike, or we all liked everything alike. So, Margaret, by nature, was happy-go-lucky, you know? I mean, she didn't mind if a thing was crooked, or if one shoe was on the bed and one was under the and on the floor, under the bed, or if the broom was on the table. It didn't matter to her. You know, Margaret was more concerning with the essentials. Now, the way of life of Ranos, the artist, was everything was had to be precise, you know, just so that even Arcady at the back here, no matter how tired they came up from their work, like Katie would come from the kitchen, but the face towel that was on a string, on a line, it had to be absolutely straight. She would notice even if it was 1 centimeter this way, and somebody would, to tease them, would do things like that, you see. So Baba one day saying, Margaret was out of her room. Baba putting his finger to his lips and saying, come on, come on, sort of, let's go. So we all quietly pussyfooting along with Baba into Margaret's room. And then he disorganized everything. He...